Bickley and Murata, Social Studies.
It's that time, 1 o'clock. We hand things off to Sarah Cazell, who brings a level of order and maturity to the show.
Totally.
Sarah Viral Cazell.
Oh, stop it.
What happened?
Don't share my personal business like that.
Whoops.
Just kidding.
Yeah, I like it.
She had a tweet yesterday, has nearly 26,000 likes. Went viral.
Wow, you put my 597 likes to shame.
What tweet was it?
It was just two lower third graphics that The Jump had on their show yesterday.
Oh, yeah, I
the
saw those. Show. Richard Jefferson and
Vince Carter.
Yeah,
and they were funny. So it's while it is very cool, and thank you, Jarrett, for shouting me out, it wasn't even my work. You know? It's not like, oh, I did something really special.
Yeah.
I just took photos of two things that made me laugh, and
just
I posted
remember,
it on Twitter.
Twitter is an echo chamber, folks.
Oh, my gosh.
I mentioned that.
Keep in mind.
Look at this.
No kidding.
I mentioned it to Jordan earlier when he came in, and he goes, yeah, what do you care? What are you, jealous?
Oh.
And I went,
you sound like it.
No, I'm not happy. I'm excited. It's just,
Have you seen an uptick of followers because of this?
I have.
Wow, look at you.
I know. Big time. Follow me at Sarah Cazell.
Richard Jefferson responded to her tweet.
Yeah,
Channing Frye stole her picture and tweeted it.
And, and you did nothing in terms of hashtags.
No.
See, and I respect that. See, I respect that. The trolling to get linked and retweeted to get more followers. It's so disgusting. It's so yucky.
Pointing at himself.
Love it.
Yeah.
I'm impressed, Sarah. Way to go.
Wow. Thank you. I worked really hard on it. I appreciate it.
Yeah.
No, took a picture of a TV.
I literally took photos and put them on Twitter. But thanks. I'm glad you guys thought that was cool. All right.
I didn't know anything about it, so thank them.
Thanks, everyone, but Dan Bickley.
There you go.
Something that was not super cool. How's that for a segue? Madison Bumgarner last night. Not good. Not good. 13
not
hits.
Good.
8 earned runs and 2 strikeouts in 5 1/3 innings against the Angels last night. So obviously not the Madison Bumgarner that D-backs fans were expecting when the team signed him last December. So of the following 4 players, which recent acquisition in Arizona sports has been the most disappointing for you so far? Madison Bumgarner, Taylor Hall, Ty Jerome, or Isaiah Simmons?
That is such a weird grouping of players.
Isaiah's,
and I know you went with
one game.
You went with one from every
That's
team.
It. Yeah.
Jerome is a backup point guard. It was a second-round draft pick.
I was trying to think of one from each sport.
He was a first-round pick. But
oh, he was first-round?
First-round pick. I was trying
was
to think
really?
Of one for each sport.
This is an easy answer for me. It's Madison Bumgarner.
It is. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah. It doesn't even come close for me or for us or for our listeners.
From every level, no matter how you look at this question, it's a horrible question, James.
No, I thought that there could be an argument made for Taylor Hall because when they traded for him, it was finally that big acquisition, a former MVP, and he was supposed to take them to the next level. And he really didn't do much when he has been here, and they didn't really do much in the playoffs.
As soon as he got to town, their goalies got hurt, and they proved in the playoffs they didn't have the team around him to compete.
Well, a real good MVP would have stepped in and played goal.
Jarrett, I do believe you have some validity to that point, but it is Madison Bumgarner by a mile. Right now, it's 87% of the vote.
1.8% of you are very hard on my man, Isaiah Simmons.
Those are the 2% trolls, is what they
are. Oh, yeah, you always have to account for that 2%. 8% voted for Taylor Hall of the Coyotes. 4% voted for Ty Jerome. And then, as you just mentioned, 1.8% for our dude, Isaiah Simmons, who indeed has played one football game for the Cardinals.
That was disappointing.
Yes, no, it was, but it wasn't 13 hits and 8 earned runs and 5 innings disappointing. Moving on to the NBA, Bam Adebayo, I know you guys were talking about this earlier, that game-sealing block for the Heat in the Eastern Conference Finals. So we are open-ended question talking about the best defensive play in sports history. What is it?
Oh, that's a good question.
First one that popped into my mind, I don't know if it's the best and if I would vote for it, but Malcolm Butler's interception in the end zone.
Oh, yeah, that's hard to top.
He had some great World Series plays. You know, Kirby Puckett had an amazing World Series catch. Willie Mays.
The first thing that popped in my mind was, because I just recently saw the clips from this NBA Eastern Conference Finals, was Larry Bird stealing that pass from Isaiah Todd.
It's a steal
pass
by Bird!
What a part of the
DJ!
Johnny Most, my goodness.
As in, most scratchy voice
ever.
Oh,
yeah. But I think Vinny just changed my mind. That Malcolm Butler play on the end zone, I mean, think about what that play did, not only for the winners, but to the losers. And
LeBron's block?
Oh, that's a good one.
That's a good one.
Was LeBron's block bigger than the one yesterday?
Yeah, it was in the finals.
It was in the finals, but this was a game.
They won a championship like a minute later.
Was it better, I should have said. How about, I hate to bring it up.
Uh-huh.
James Harrison.
Yeah.
That was pretty good,
That was
too.
Faulty tackling.
100-yard touchdown return in the Super
Zantrell
Bowl.
Roll's fault.
Yeah.
Yeah, a lot of people said James Harrison in the responses.
Roll.
The Derek Jeter relay.
Tootsie roll.
Derek Jeter relay
roll.
Play was pretty good.
Sushi roll.
Oh, let me see your Tootsie roll.
I just said Tootsie roll.
Stop, drop, and roll.
Toilet paper roll.
The one we didn't mention.
Esther roll.
Esther roll.
Yesterday, you might remember this, Sarah. It was so great. Gamble started talking about Washington football team quarterbacks, and he was going on and on about how Washington's had a lot of different guys win quarterbacks. I'm like, oh, it's coming. It's coming.
Billy Kilmer.
Doug Williams.
Joe Theismann. Jay Schrader.
Mark Rippon.
Oh, I think he said Rippian.
Rippian.
Rex Grossman.
Rippian.
Mark Rippian.
Keith Schuler. We didn't mention the tackle either. With
the Titans and Rams. Yeah, the Mike Jones tackle. There's a lot of them. That's a good question, Jared.
It is a good question.
Okay, 1-1.
Yeah.
Yes, a lot of good answers. All right,
Carlin. He's batting 500 on the year.
All right, we're moving on to the NFL. Earlier in the show, you guys were talking about the Washington football team, the next opponent for the Cardinals, and their surprise win in Week 1 on Sunday. So of the following four teams, which surprise Week 1 winner do you think is the most legitimate? The Washington football team, Jacksonville, the Los Angeles Rams, or the Las Vegas Raiders? Which team is most legit?
Pains me to say it, but of those four choices, I'm going with the Rams. I think they beat the best team of the four, and they look decent. I'm going with the Rams.
Okay.
Edging out the Vegas Raiders.
Okay.
Yeah, I think
Jacobs for the Raiders looks...
Yeah, he's good.
Yeah, let's see what the Vegas Raiders do with the Saints this weekend.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm going to vote for the Rams,
I guess,
too.
Let's see what the Washington football team does with the Cardinals.
Yeah.
Because that defense looked way better than I thought.
Well, right now, no surprise here. I think it doesn't hurt that they're in the NFC West and people are paying attention to them. But
they beat the Cowboys.
Yes. 58% of the voters went with the Rams. 24% went with the Las Vegas Raiders. 10% voted for the Washington football team. 9% voted for Jacksonville as the most legitimate surprise winner. And one last question for you guys. Bickley, earlier in the show, you mentioned that you were watching the movie Stripes.
I was.
Yesterday. And that you might even like it more than Caddyshack.
I think I do. I think Caddyshack is more iconic, more quotable. But I think in terms of Bill Murray's performance and just overall, well, yeah, I really like Stripes.
Lighten up, Francis.
The performance from Warren Oates in that as Sergeant Hulka is so great.
Warren Oates.
Well, Bill Murray is actually like Bill Murray in Stripes.
Quaker Oates.
And Caddyshack is playing like a...
That's what you hit on something that I was going to bring up. I love all four of those movies.
Mm-hmm.
Caddyshack is not a quote-unquote Bill Murray movie.
No.
He's a small part of a great cast. The other three movies are Bill Murray vehicles.
Yes.
And I love all it's really hard not to pick Ghostbusters for me, but Groundhog Day is the best of those movies.
Is it?
Yeah, okay. I think so.
I'm voting Stripes.
You're going Stripes?
Yeah.
Okay, you are in the minority, but voting is pretty spread out on this one. A lot of love for all four of these movies. 32% say Caddyshack is the best Bill Murray movie. 30% went with Groundhog Day. 24% say Ghostbusters. 15% vote for strikes.
And lots of write-in votes.
Yes.
How did Meatballs do?
I didn't see any Meatballs, but I'd
Scrooged?
See Quick. Yeah, I see Scrooged, Kingpin.
What About Bob?
What About Bob?
See, Kingpin's one of my favorite movies, too, but again, that's not a Bill Murray
movie. No, that's true.
Movie.
Lost in Translation. Quick Change. Space Jam. I would definitely not call that a Bill Murray movie. Oh, here we go. Meatballs.
Yeah, there we go.
Yeah, there we go.
That's such a good question. I want to go home and watch a Bill Murray movie now. That's Social Studies. We do it every day at 1 o'clock with Sarah Cazell. Coming up next, got a little bit of movement, tiny bit of movement.
Yeah, the governor of a lot of people pointing fingers in the Pac-12.
Yeah.
It's his fault. No, it's his fault.
You know what happens when you point a finger at someone.
Oh.
Yeah, we'll get into that next. Bickley and Murata, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
Bickley and Murata, 98.7 FM, Arizona's Sports Station.
I don't see any way the Pac-12 is going to play in the winter if the Big Ten is playing now. Mm-hmm. They're going to play by themselves? I mean, who would you play in the postseason? There'd be no Rose Bowl. There'd be no bowl games. So, to me, I've always thought that a winter season is basically strength in numbers. And the more conferences that are doing it, the more legitimacy it has. If you're the Pac-12 and you're the only one that's playing in the winter, I can't see how that's going to happen.
John Wilner, Pac-12 Hotline, San Jose Mercury News. He joined the Bickley and Murata show yesterday, shared his thoughts. What he says makes sense. It's even more clear now because the Big Ten made it official. They're coming back the weekend of October 24th in time, if everything goes right, to be included in the college football playoff. The Pac-12 still not there. Gavin Newsom, the governor of California, had a briefing today. And he addressed Pac-12 football, and he's getting a lot of criticism for what he said. This is coming from the Twitter account of Ryan Karchi, who's a beat writer for the LA Times for USC. California Governor Gavin Newsom is suggesting there's nothing keeping the Pac-12 from playing football games, even though they aren't allowed to practice in cohorts larger than 12. He went on to say, this quote from Gavin Newsom, quote, "I want to make this crystal clear. Nothing in the state guidelines denies the ability for the Pac-12 to resume. That's been a misrepresentation of the facts." Karchi followed it up by saying, "Newsom appears convinced that you can play football games despite never meeting as a full team or practicing tackling or blocking."
Okay, well, all right. What is, it's laughable, but it's also horrifying. Where's the disconnect here?
I don't think Gavin Newsom knows a thing about football.
and I think now that the pressure has squarely come down on him. Oh, so are you're the one stopping this? The difference is, in the Pac-12, is there enough pressure from people to actually go and make exceptions for college football? That's exactly what the NFL did in most of its municipalities because they have daily testing. So if you have daily testing, which is the key to all of this, can't you have college football? And if that's the case, where are the school presidents on this? Where's Michael Crow on this?
That's a great question. But again, the situation different in Arizona than it is in California, certainly. But here's the thinking, and I think a lot of people in the state of California feel this way.
All right.
I was in one of the commercial breaks, overheard somebody say, Gavin Newsom's he's issuing a statement, and somebody made the joke. He's never allowing anybody to go anywhere or do anything ever again.
Yeah.
That's the feeling for a lot of people in the state of California, and I think that certainly bleeds over into Pac-12 football.
All right, yeah. Listen, but I think now there's a lot on the line here, man. I don't think you can, as the Pac-12, ignore the long-term damages of not playing football when everybody else is. How are you going to explain that down the road? You're not. You're going to deal with so much negative recruiting. You are going to be painted as the JV. You are going to become more irrelevant than you already are. It's just, I don't know. And again, there's real stuff at risk here for Arizona State University, because you tell me another school in the Pac-12 that's on a better trajectory from where they where they are and where they've been to where they're going than ASU. You can't. And so
this could act as a major speed bump there.
It sure could. And it's interesting to me that Herm Edwards hasn't been a stronger voice to return given the quality of his team and where the program is going. Because like I said, most of the schools in the country that are pushing the envelope to get back are schools with really good teams that don't want this window
Ohio
shut
State,
out. You name all.
Clemson, Alabama,
yeah. All that stuff. And if we want to believe ASU is in that class, why aren't we hearing more? Well, my gut feeling is what Herm Edwards is getting from his bosses, Ray Anderson and Michael Crow, is that, no, we're cool without playing. I think the Pac-12 was very comfortable up until a few days ago as being the adults in the room, as being the left coast elitists who are like, no, we're not. We don't do that. We don't sell our souls to football. We're the Pac-12. We care about track and golf and swimming. And there's something to be said for that. But now it's not so easy to lean on that because the Big Ten has bailed on.
Right. They might have thought, well, okay, we'll do all that. Plus, as long as we have the Rose Bowl in February or March with, the Big Ten,
exactly. That's
still the granddaddy of it all. That'll be our championship.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. I firmly believe that. So now it's scramble mode for everybody. Fingers pointing in every direction. Hey, no, there's nothing here that says you can't play football. Oh, really? Well, when can we practice 11-on-11? Oh, I don't know.
We had a listener bring up a great point.
Mm-hmm.
But there's three NFL teams currently holding business in the state of California.
It's a good point.
One in the state of Washington, highly affected.
Mm-hmm. So why doesn't that apply to those? Yeah, that's a great point.
Private business, I suppose. But,
maybe.
It's such a messy story. And I know John Canzano wrote about it in the Oregonian today and said, look, the Big Ten, yeah, it was sloppy. It was messy. They misstepped a lot of the way to this decision. But they used logic, and the logic being, if it's safe to play football, then why aren't we playing?
Mm-hmm.
So they got there. And he thinks this will eventually push the Pac-12 to follow suit. But again, the clock is ticking. The Big Ten left themselves a very small window to get those games in for inclusion into the college football playoff. And we'll find out now what the Pac-12's desire is to enact their game changer of this rapid testing.
The Big Ten left such a small window. It's literally like one day, right? Their season would end one day before the voting or whatever.
Yes.
Yeah.
But
there's not
within the window.
Yeah. There's not much margin for error here. And that's exactly kind of what's going on here. So I would expect there's going to be some movement. But how does the Pac-12 unpack this? No pun intended. How do they save face?
They hire the most expensive moving company to unpack it.
Yeah, you need to get some hot mics around some of the ADs in the Pac-12 and see what's going on.
But it's really like the Big Ten, there's always been this sort of cloak of mystery around the Big Ten. Like, okay, was there a vote? I don't know. Of course there was a vote. Well, I'm not sure. Was there a vote? I don't know. Was there evidence? Were there doctors? I don't know. They were accused of being not transparent, which the Pac-12 was. But again, everything the Pac-12 leaned on, which I applauded at the time, it's changed.
Mm-hmm.
The potential impact of myocarditis, if you can, and I'm not an expert here, I'm not trying to paint myself off as one, but in reading about this, if you are able to detect in real time when people become infected with COVID-19, you can remove them from competition. And doing so then significantly lessens the effect of myocarditis, according to the new medical research. So they're thinking, okay, if we can do that, and if we can contact trace with immediate results like this, then why can't we do this? The NFL, look at the NFL. They've got a daily testing routine regimen in place, and look how well things have gone so far.
I don't think that's Wood Vic.
What is that, Formica?
I always took it for granted.
Al Michaels.
What is that?
I always took it for granted. No.
Coming up next, we got our first look at the Arizona Cardinals Week 2 injury report. We'll share the details, some other Cardinals news next. It's Bickley and Marotta, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. Ah!
what we expected, honestly. You know, we that's the way we practice. That's the way we prepare. So we knew going out, if we followed our game plan and didn't, you know, hurt ourselves, then, you know, we would have a good chance of winning. And that's what happened. Obviously, you know, other things have to happen, like special teams, a block punt. You know, those things are big. And, you know, these guys practice hard here. But we expected it and prepared for it. And, you know, we're not trying to get a pat on our back right now because it's, a, you know, it's 15 more games to be played in the regular season. So it's a long season ahead of us. But, you know, we're for sure trying to let people know with our play and, you know, not talking.
Cardinals receiver DeAndre Hopkins talking with the media yesterday. They weren't surprised by beating the 49ers. They expected to. Today, DeAndre Hopkins did not practice. Non-injury related. Larry Fitzgerald did not practice. I know I'm doing this for your benefit. 14 for 151.
In for a penny.
Take a day off, DeAndre.
In for a pound.
It is funny. It is. It's very interesting.
It is, but it's not yet at issue status. Mason Cole did not practice today with that hamstring injury. Backup linebacker Kylie Fitz did not practice with a wrist injury. Jalen Thompson, ankle injury. Max Williams, ankle injury. They did not practice. Josh Jones also has an ankle injury. He's limited. So, was limited today, I should say. Haven't had a look at the Washington injury report just yet. But nothing really surprising on that list.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think we're going to see a lot of DNPs next to Larry Fitzgerald and DeAndre Hopkins' name this year, so might as well get used to it in week two, right?
Well, yeah, and again, and I think that it's not ideal, but it didn't look to be an impediment on Sunday. But a lot of that just seemed to be like Kyler Murray was just, bam, first read, there's DeAndre Hopkins, that's where the ball is going.
I mean, maybe the rest of the receivers shouldn't practice because those were the only two players that caught passes.
Yeah, yeah.
The only two receivers that caught any passes for the Cardinals for any yards were those two guys.
Yeah.
The entire game.
So with the possibility of Mason Cole, you have to consider it. He left. It didn't look good at the time. Mm-hmm. Just looking, seeing how gingerly he was walking off the field with that hamstring injury. Gilliard comes in, plays well. Kyler Murray was asked today about the two centers because he worked with both of them in week one. Here's what he had to say.
Yeah, I mean, I got full faith in both of those guys. Obviously, you know, unfortunate that Mason goes down, but I mean, this is a, you know, next man up type of mentality. When he goes down, Mont's got to come in and do his job just as well. And I think he did a great job. You know, we kept it moving, and we finished in the third and fourth quarter we needed to.
Yeah, Cliff Kingsbury also commented on Lamont Gilliard's performance.
Very impressive, and that's how he's been. I mean, he's a very confident young man. He believes he could start anywhere and could be playing anywhere, and he prepares that way. And so I think when he stepped in, nobody blinked. He handled himself well. He made the calls. He led that group, and couldn't have been more impressed by the way he handled things to lead two fourth quarter touchdown drives to seal that game, his first meaningful playing time in the NFL, that'll build a lot of confidence for him moving forward.
Yeah, I mean, from what you saw early in the game mm-hmm. on Sunday, if you weren't paying attention to the Mason Cole injury, you would have not noticed any drop-off in the offensive line. I thought they played, you know, regardless of who was in the game, played well together as a unit for basically 60 minutes. There wasn't wasn't a whole lot of undue pressure or anything like that on Kyler.
To me, this is always a great indication as to the quality of the offensive line coach. When a guy gets injured and another guy gets in there, how much belief is there? Does the synergy and does the collective mentality stay the same? Sean Coogler is really good at what he does, and I think there's a lot of pride in that room, and those guys respond. They respond to challenges, and I think the fact that he's really good at what he does, I've seen evidence of it in situations like this, where somebody goes down and the offensive line does not really seem all that affected.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's the case.
And that's
now, they're going to have to be really good this week as well.
Yeah, but that was something they were trumpeting during preparation, training camp, getting ready for the season. We feel really good about our offensive line depth. Mm-hmm. We heard it over and over again. But even today, and Ross Tucker wrote a piece, and I forget where it appeared, but ranked, you know, put all the offensive lines in the NFL into a group. Still had the Cardinals in the below average category. which, you know, we've talked about how tardy the national perspective can be on things.
Yep.
I didn't think the offensive line was that big of an issue last year. I think they improved this year, obviously adding depth. I really liked what I saw from Kelvin Beachum starting at right tackle. I thought he had a pretty good game. I'm not saying this an overwhelming strength of the team, but I'd be shocked if by the end of the year people are still considering the Cardinals' offensive line to be a weakness.
Yes. I think that
especially if they continue to run the ball the way that they are.
Yeah. Well,
there was one team that had more rushing yards than them in week one, and that was New England.
And I think people who made that mistake, who looked at the 48 sacks of Kyler Murray a year ago and blamed that on the offensive line, that won't happen this time around because I think a lot of the national observers are actually going to pay attention and not just read box scores or look at statistics or game summaries. I think if the Cardinals remain a winning team, given the DeAndre Hopkins factor, the Kyler Murray and the Larry Fitzgerald factor, there'll be a lot of actual eyeballs on this football team this year. And you'll see it next year with the amount of national TV dates they get. That's the way it always works.
Yeah, and you heard the DeAndre Hopkins soundbite coming into this discussion about, hey, we expected this to happen. Earlier played this soundbite for you. I'll play it for you again. Kyler Murray saying, okay, we won week one. Don't expect there to be any lingering negative effects.
Oh, there's no hangover. There will never be a hangover, at least for me. It's a day-to-day process, and I think this team understands that. You know, we obviously, in the past couple of years haven't had a lot of success, so the easy thing is to, get complacent and feel good about a win. I guess a good team, but that's not what we're doing here. Like I said, it's a day-to-day process. We got to practice well this week. We got to execute come Sunday.
Yeah, when you beat the 49ers in week one, and most people would put that near the top of the list of the biggest surprises on a national basis in week one, there's hype that comes along with
definitely
that. Carson Palmer was on with Doug and Wolf this morning, talked about the Cardinals opener, the attention that they're getting around the league, and how to deal with it.
Yeah, I mean, it's the same cliche, just one week at a time, and it's cliche. You hear it over and over again. It's kind of like when you hear somebody say, well, it is what it is. You get tired of people saying it is what it is. You get tired of people saying one week at a time, but there is no better way to describe the mindset of the Cardinals and other teams that are 1-0 and the hype train. I mean, you've got to focus on the next week, not, oh, we could be 3-0, we could be 4-0, we could go into the bye 7-1. Once you start doing that, you're overlooking that week's opponent. So, I mean, I know fans get tired of hearing it, but it is the truth. They need to play one week at a time. They need to take Tuesday is Wednesday is Wednesday is Thursday, Friday as they go through the week.
I think Carson Palmer was talking to you, Bic.
Sounded like it, didn't it?
Yeah, I think the only thing he left out was your name.
Yeah.
Looking at you, Bickley.
Right.
I mean, I see why you made the statement that you did in Monday's Blast. And that was, all right, you got past the toughest opponent you have on paper in the first 5 weeks of the season. The distance from 1-0 to
5-0
to 5-0 is not that much. Mm-hmm. And I'm paraphrasing what you said.
I am.
But
I did.
You could argue that the teams get worse every week from now on until week six.
You could. But then again.
But that would be completely. I think what you're pointing out is that's completely ignorant to what we know football to be all about.
Yeah, but I mean, we did this similar exercise with Tampa Bay. They lose to New Orleans. They're playing four teams in a row that they should beat.
Yeah.
You know, after 5 weeks, the Buccaneers should be 4-1. We don't know what the Buccaneers are. We don't know what the Cardinals are. We don't know what Washington is.
Yeah. At the very least.
But I was very encouraged by what I saw.
It's a good point. It's a fair point. It really is, because I know better than anybody that the looking at opponents sequentially and trying to draw any conclusion from it is foolhardy. Mm-hmm. It's ignorant. And I know that. But I do it anyways.
We all do.
Well, at the very least, if you look at the quarterbacks of the upcoming opponents, nothing scares you. And that's what we know.
Matthew Stafford is a hell of a quarterback.
Yeah.
He just happens
to be. It's the Lions.
He just happens to play quarterback for Siberia.
Right. Yeah. That's right. That's what it is.
All right, final thoughts coming up on this Wednesday edition. It's Bickley and Murata, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
98.7 FM, Arizona's Sports Station. Bickley and Murata, Song of the Day.
All right, Vinny, explain.
I would, but it's really loud. I am prone, as many people are, to the phenomenon of getting songs stuck in your head.
Mm-hmm.
Usually it lasts for a couple of hours. Sometimes it lasts for longer, like weeks at a time. When that happens, it's almost always a brand new song that I'm obsessed with.
Right.
This song by The Fix, which is, I don't know, 35 years old, has been stuck in my head for about 2 weeks.
Really?
Yes. And I love this song, so it's not a horrible thing.
It's almost exactly 35. It's 34 years old.
Is it?
Yeah.
Sorry, I made this song older than it needed.
Every band you love from this era has band members that look like Robert Downey Jr.'s character in Back to School.
That is true. Does that happen to you? Song stuck in your head?
Yeah.
For long periods of time?
No. Not for long. I don't think for long periods of time.
Yeah. What do you think
of this
song slash band?
So I don't mind The Fix.
Are there any new bands or recent bands, Dan or Vinny, that your guys have been on? You were all over the that one. What was
I talk about
Led Zeppelin band.
Come on. You don't
Greta Van Fleet.
Greta Van Fleet.
Yeah.
I talk about Nothing But Thieves all the time. New album coming out next month, by the way.
I like the Arctic Monkeys are cool, but they're not exactly new.
No.
So,
I like this up-and-coming duo, Captain and Tennille.
Ooh.
I think they got something. They got a certain je ne sais quoi.
I'm all on the Captain's bandwagon, but Tennille,
So that's the explanation for today's Song of the Day. And the Song of the Day is brought to you by Sonic. Get to a Sonic now because happy hour starts at 2 o'clock. Drive into your nearest Sonic location for half-price drinks and slushes. Got a couple of updates on some stories. There is a story, Bick. I said this to you. We had a lot of discussion about Paul George and the Clippers. Paul George, weird comments, weird performance in a Game 7.
Very.
Weird stay in the bubble for that guy and that team. This is from Chris B. Haynes of Yahoo Sports. Early in the second quarter, a struggling George had committed two careless turnovers in less than a minute. The second mishap was a half-court pass to Montrezl Harrell, who was near the paint, but surrounded by Murray and Michael Porter Jr., Murray picked off the pass. Harrell approached his teammate about the risky pass, with George not taking responsibility and arguing the pass could have been caught had Harrell made the right play, sources said. Harrell responded with something along the lines of, "You're always right, nobody can tell you nothing," and expletives were uttered from both players, sources said. George eventually toned down his rhetoric, but a heated Harrell wasn't having it. Teammates began clapping on the sideline, in part to disguise what was going on, and in an attempt to defuse the situation. The incident de-escalated shortly after Coach Doc Rivers took his seat to go over the game plan.
Wow.
That's happening during the game. Montrezl Harrell is one of the few guys that I thought played pretty well last night for the Clippers, and he plays really hard.
I think it was the only one who scored in the fourth quarter.
We forgot about the Montrezl Harrell Luka Doncic incident.
Yeah, we did. We left that out of the whole laundry list of things.
Yeah, I mean, the Clippers really put forth a really whack, awful effort.
But so I'm reading this. This was aggregated by NBCSports.com. And the line that precedes that snippet that I just read to you says, Paul George was making some interesting decisions during the game, too. Also commented about this is not a championship or bust season for the Clippers, when everyone else in the organization from top to bottom had been saying that it is. How do you consider Paul George's future with L.A.? He talked about we didn't have enough time together. Do they move on?
Vinny, what I've always known about...
Does Kawhi Leonard move on?
Is he contractually free? Does he have an out or a clause or is or something? Kawhi Leonard?
I don't think so.
No, I think he's under contract for a couple more years. What I've always thought to believe about NBA players, the great ones always show it when it matters most, and certainly in the playoffs. Paul George did not play like an elite player.
No.
And I don't know whether the mental anxiety and the issues he spoke of were still in play at the end of all of this, but this was not, this Clippers team is really...
But that quote from Harold during the game that was reported on,
that's unbelievable.
You don't make a comment to that like that to somebody unless it's been festering and building for quite some time.
Yep.
You're always right. Nobody can tell you anything.
It's true.
Very interesting.
Kawhi signed a 3-year deal, but he has an opt-out in 2021. So
after next year.
Yeah.
The All-NBA first, second, and third teams were announced. First team, Giannis, LeBron, James Harden, Anthony Davis, and...
Devin Booker!
Luka Doncic.
Oh.
Second team, Kawhi Leonard. What's going on with my microphone?
Know. What happened there?
Oh.
Are you good now?
Kawhi Leonard, Nikola Jokic, Damian Lillard, Chris Paul, Pascal Siakam. Third team, Jason Tatum, Jimmy Butler, Rudy Gobert, Ben Simmons, and Russell Westbrook. Devin Booker got some votes. He got 3 third team votes.
Okay.
Behind, got less than Bradley Beal, Kyle Lowry, Trey Young, Donovan Mitchell, and Kemba
Russell
Walker.
Russell Westbrook was not better than Devin Booker.
I
don't need to go there with you. I know you're going to agree with me on that.
I agree. How about that? Russell Westbrook and Paul George were together last year in Oklahoma City, and both of them fell on their faces this year.
Look at that.
Of course, it's all James Harden's fault.
Everything always is, man. Really. It always is.
How about that? 2 of the contenders to win the championship in the West, the Rockets and the Clippers, and we don't know what their future of either team really is going to be.
Well, I think
after these playoffs,
the Rockets are going to look completely different. How about the rumors that they're going after Jeff Van Gundy again?
Are they? I wasn't aware.
Yeah, Jeff Van Gundy, Ty Lue apparently high on their list. Daryl Morey's job is safe.
Tracy McGrady.
Steve Francis.
Vernon Maxwell.
Jeremy Lin.
Calvin Murphy.
Calvin Murphy.
I got to throw in my
Kevin Kuhnert. Billy Pultz.
Trey Wingo.
Rudy Tomjanovich.
We never talked about the Trey Wingo thing, by the way. We are gigantic fans of Trey Wingo on this show. When he comes on, he's great with us.
Mm-hmm.
Not renewed by ESPN. Free agent. But he's still breaking news. He put out on Twitter within the half hour. Pac-12 coaches conference call Friday.
Friday?
Couple things.
I told you, 3 days it's going to take.
It is a coaches call. Why do it Thursday when you can do it Friday?
Why do it Wednesday when you could do it Friday?
It's a conference call. It's
what
not
are these
like,
coaches
it's
doing?
It's not like an in-person meeting.
Are these coaches getting paid right now?
But the other thing is, should we even get that excited about news of a coaches conference call? Because they don't have any power anyway.
Yeah, they don't.
If it was a president's conference call, maybe we'd be up to something in the Pac-12.
Wow.
Josh Weinfuss, who covers the Cardinals for ESPN.com, put out this moments ago. NFL COVID-19 testing from September 6th. He put COVID-10. Is that a typo or is there a new virus
I
don't know about?
Let's hope not.
Yeah. Testing from September 6th to September 12th. 40,479 tests for players and team personnel. 15,959 tests for 2,511 players and 24,000 tests for personnel. 2 new confirmed positive tests among players and 5 new confirmed positives among other personnel. So again... To your point earlier in the show, with rapid, frequent, reliable testing, the NFL is heading into week 2 with very little incident.
Knock on wood.
Although those aren't 0-0.
No,
they're not.
They're not.
But they're also not playing in a bubble.
Yeah, interesting stuff.
Yeah, I know we mentioned it earlier in the show. Big win for the Mercury last night. Diana Taurasi got called away to another another engagement.
Of course she did.
And we're efforting to have Dee on the show tomorrow.
What? What, Sarah? She's got a long history of blowing us off. That's what we're laughing at.
No, I'm just excited that she might be on the show.
Oh, she's been on plenty of times.
And it's always magic.
She's missed plenty of times.
She's a busy lady.
She's the greatest of all time.
Diana and Vic, there's a chemistry between them.
Yes.
Thanks to Cameron Cox for joining us. Thanks to you for listening. We are out. We'll catch you tomorrow. Burns and Gambo up next here on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. See you.